Welcome to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, a view of culture, current events, and politics through a biblical lens, with your hosts, Neil Boron, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh, and John Rush. Now let's join the conversation.
Very happy to be back with you folks for another week of the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast. Myself, Bob, and John, and Neil, and we're Rogerless again this week. We look forward to having Roger back with us next week. Guys, how are you?
Good, Bob. Thank you.
Doing great.
Always good talking with you. Now, let me ask you guys something. What we're doing the podcast here today. We're working today. We're doing our shows today and everything else. But what if we could collect more money from the government to stay home? Would we stay home and not go work? You know, that's actually the theme of what we're going to talk about in this week's podcast, folks, because we're seeing this crisis really all across the country with many employers that are having difficulty finding employees. Now, there's some companies that aren't having problems, but there's a lot of other companies that are. Help wanted signs everywhere, and we're seeing restaurants that are closing down 1 or 2 days a week because, and they're flat out saying it's because we don't have the staff and we can't get people to come back to work. We put help wanted signs out and we just can't get people to work. And why? Because they're staying at home because they continue to collect government money being subsidized by the government to stay home. Now, we know this started last year, of course, with COVID and when the original businesses were all shut down. It's like, okay, let's keep people from losing their homes and cars, and so we'll go ahead and supplement their unemployment with an extra $600 a week. And so it's like, okay, fine. But now here we are over a year later, and we're still doing the same thing. We're still sending money to people. And I read a report that said that 53% of Americans would take a pay cut if they went back to their original job. So people are staying home, sitting on the couch playing video games. Why in the world would they go to work if they don't have to? So there's a lot of different aspects of this that we want to unpack. But first, guys, I'd love to just get your general overview reaction on all of this. And John, maybe if we could start with you. You're a businessman. You employ a lot of people. You have for a long time. Before we get into some of the nitty-gritty layers of this, just in an overall general sense, what are your views on employers having difficulty getting employees because they make more money staying at home collecting from the government?
No, it's very real. So for everybody listening, this is not something that we're just, you know, making up. These are true statements that Bob just made, and I can verify that, Bob, through, you know, not only, you know, myself, my own business, things that we've encountered around our area. I don't know what it's like around, you know, you and Neil's area or even Roger's area, but I'm guessing it's very much the same. In Colorado, we have still, you know, we're still extending the unemployment benefits until September, which, by the way, I think is just ridiculous. We'll get into that probably as we go through the show today. But, and I consult businesses across the country as well, guys, and I will tell you that I've got some businesses where, yeah, they are struggling. These are high-paid jobs. I mean, you know, if you're an auto technician and or work in a service facility, there are anymore, there's very, very few people. Unless you're just sweeping the floors, nobody's making minimum wage in the auto industry, period. Everybody's making a very good wage. And yet, because of the circumstances that we're in right now, guys, there are those situations where, depending upon how far away a person lives from work, what their situation is with, you know, spouses and daycare and so on, in some cases, in fact, in a lot of cases, yes, they can actually stay home and make more net money, not necessarily more money as far as their take home, but when you look at their overall expenses of what they have to do to actually go to work, at the end of the day, yes, they are ahead by not going to work.
Yeah, well, which is really a shame. And Neil, what's your immediate kind of overview observation of this crisis going on with employers?
In a lot of ways, the same. But you know, I think as much as we, I'm tempted. I'm talking about me personally. I'm tempted to look at this just as, you know, based on like collecting money for doing no work kind of thing. And I know we're going to talk about that, and we should, because I guarantee there are some people who are approaching it that way. I think that there are other sides, and I'll bring them up maybe just a little bit later on. But, you know, this thing actually started during the Trump administration when the extra benefits were $600 per week. I just got to believe that somewhere along the line, either, you know, former members of the Trump administration or members of Congress, particularly on the Republican side, wish they would have put an expiration date on the whole idea of right. added incentives, because, you know, the reality is that there's a major disincentive for going to work that stands to reason. But like when the benefits were $600 a week. And by the way, what do they say the average is? Like $387 or something? Yeah, it's $387 is the average unemployment check for somebody. So add $600 to that. That makes it $987. If you divide that by 40 hours a week, you're basically making around $25 an hour. So what if your job is, let's say, construction, and your job is to wheel concrete from the truck to the spot where it goes in the ground, and how much would they have to pay you to get off the couch and go to work? Because it isn't really just $25. Because then what you got is, okay, I could make $25 for sitting on my couch or $25 for wheeling concrete 40 hours a week. The incentive would need to be more like $40 an hour or $50 an hour. Who in their right mind would do that? It's human nature. So they created a situation that in one sense is compassionate and tries to address some of the problems people have paying their bills. I get that. But this is actually absolutely anti-workforce long term. This is going to destroy America if you keep this kind of thing going.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, and by the way, you know, you ask who would do that? Who would go back to work instead of staying home or whatever? We're definitely going to be getting into that question of philosophically and biblically, how do we look at that? So that's coming up later on, certainly in this podcast. I am curious, though, was this the right thing to do originally? John, I'll be honest with you. I had mixed emotions early on. You know what? It's interesting you say that, because that's kind of the way that I was looking at this. And I thought, oh, boy, you know, everybody's giving it to me going, Bob, well, if businesses are shut down, I mean, there's got to come a point. But I was pushing back against this last year going, let's let the free market system work this out. Let's not create a precedent of government dependency here. But so, all right, so you would say that the Republicans and Trump last year, from the very beginning, should not have added the $600 a week.
And if they did, they should have done it with some great caveats, much to what Neil just said, and I think should have made it very dependent upon, were you working a quote-unquote, and I hate these terms, guys, but we have to use them because everybody understands what we mean when we say them, but essential versus non-essential. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, we had some non-essential workforce that was put out of work. And yes, my heart goes out to those that were in the restaurant fields and even the entertainment world and venues and things along those lines. And I get it. I mean, I understand all of what went into that. Although, to your point, Bob, I think the free market would have come along and filled in and backfilled for a lot of those, because even a lot of the quote-unquote essential jobs that were out there, companies that were out there, were actually looking to backfill and hire more people, and then, you know, couldn't for the reasons we're talking about and we'll continue to talk about through today. So I'm one that says that if we were going to give them out, and that's a big if in my part, we should have put enough caveats along with it to disincentivize people to go get it. In other words, we make it to where if you're going to go get it, you're going to work for it, there's going to be a time limit to it, and it's not going to be something where you're just going to sit on the couch for the following 12 months and not go get a job. That's my feeling on it. Now, am I right in saying all of that? I think those are the things we're going to discuss today.
Well, and actually, John, I agree with you on this. I do. Let me play devil's advocate, though, with you, okay, as a businessman.
Okay.
We all remember last year when this was happening, okay? Things were happening so fast, and I remember the discussions being, okay, wait a minute here. 2 weeks from now, people are going to start getting shut-off notices from the utility companies, okay? It's all happening that fast. People don't have a month, 6 weeks, 2 months to wait for all the dust to settle. We need to get checks in their hands right now. And the argument at the time was, we just don't have the time to try to sift through and make this thing right and make it clean and cherry pick and pick and choose who's essential, who's not essential, mm-hmm. who should get how much, who should get not how much, what percentage of your income normally should you. You know, we should be able to say, well, okay, well, let's say that you receive 85% of what your normal income has been over the course of the last 6 months on average, we'll say. And there would have been too much red tape and logistics involved to try to make this more tailor fit for the situation. And so therefore let's just blanket, boom, $600 for everybody across the board because they need the money now. They can't right. wait for us to figure out the right. details. Devil's advocate argument. How do you respond?
I get that. And you know what? My response would have been there was an easy way to handle that, given the fact that for those of you that don't know this, every employer out there is coded, quote unquote, by the federal government as to how they qualify in their area of expertise. So every business has a particular code that the feds use. The SBA uses it. It's used for all sorts of data collection and so on. And Bob, it would have been really easy, even if we were going to go down that path, to say, okay, if you work for these particular industries and they have these particular codes, then yes, you qualify for that unemployment check. Otherwise, it's a no. I mean, there would have been very easy ways to handle this and not make it so complicated.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's do this. Short break. We'll continue the conversation next here on the National Crawford Roundtable.
Be transformed by the Word of God with Alistair Begg and Truth for Life. Every weekday, Alistair Begg teaches the Bible through in-depth verse-by-verse attention to the Word of God. You can listen to Truth for Life on your local Crawford broadcasting station or listen online at truthforlife.org. Please support this important ministry with your donations at the truthforlife.org website or by calling 888-588-7884 and be sure to let them know you heard about Truth for Life from the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
Continuing this National Crawford Roundtable podcast with myself, Bob Duco out of Detroit, Neil Boron live from Buffalo, New York, John Rush, Rush to Reason out of Denver, Colorado, Roger Marsh of The Bottom Line from the People's Republic of California not with us this week. We look forward to having Roger back next week. Talking about the disincentive people have to go back to work to get a job because the government pays them more to stay at mm-hmm. home right now, still milking the COVID issue. Neil, what do you
think? Bob, I want to add one thing to what I just said a moment ago, too, real quick, before I forget. There were, and I know this because I am one of these that this happened to, there were people that when that check came out, you know, that unemployment check, you know, program came out a year ago. If they were somebody that was on the line, like Neil said a moment ago, of what their hourly wage was, and they sat down and could figure out, listen, I don't need to drive to work. I don't have to spend gas money. I don't have to take my time driving to work. I don't have to get up and get dressed in the mornings. I mean, all of these other factors came into play, and they said, wait a minute. I can just say that I'm afraid that I'm going to get COVID at work, so I'm now going to stay home, which, by the way, they could legally do a year ago. And if they decided that that was the case, even in the essential workforce, if they decided they wanted to do that, they could, and I had a few that actually did that. So that proves my point that this was not a good program from the get-go, guys.
All right. And Neil, what's your take? If we could go back in a time machine, would you say let's not even send out the original $600 additional supplement checks at all, and just let people go on their basic basic unemployment? We know what the arguments would be. We would hear that foreclosures would have been through the roof. There would have been people who lost their cars. They couldn't put food on the table. How can we do something like this? Businesses are shut down. It's not their fault. What should we have done originally last year?
Well, I wish I knew. I wish I could look in a crystal ball and know the answer to that question, because I'm not an economist and I'm not a business owner. So I obviously don't have that kind of perspective on what you're talking about. But I do think some relief was necessary in some form initially. I mean, it was a shock to the nation. All of a sudden, we're shut down. People aren't getting checks. And a lot of people live paycheck to paycheck. You know, they're not Dave Ramsey listeners. they don't have a savings account or emergency fund. So, I mean, and then I don't know, but I think that maybe, like, for instance, the utilities who were saying, look, you were going to shut off your heat, your electric, if you don't pay your bill. Maybe some muzzle could have been put on them for a little while just to say, well, wait a minute, you're going to have to hold off on collecting those because we've got a national emergency going on right now. But I kind of wonder if there was some way. Now, I get what you're saying, Bob, and I couldn't have explained it better what you were talking about, like wanting to tailor fit some kind of a program based on people's level of income and willingness to work and what, I don't know, what all those details, all those variables. But I kind of wonder if it couldn't have been phased over time to begin to give more incentives to employers and to those who actually are going to work. In other words, when you pay your taxes at the end of the year, you're getting some kind of additional tax credit because you went to work, you earned a paycheck, you helped stimulate the economy. And I realized, I mean, there was a lot of businesses that were just in shutdown mode. They didn't have customers coming through their door, so they weren't able to bring in money, so they couldn't employ people. But there were probably some that were on the bubble that were considered essential or something, and they just had to shut down. and because they couldn't make the numbers work. Is it possible that maybe some of the employers, people like John, for instance, could have been offered additional incentives of some kind, maybe even on the back end, you know, based upon your income for the year and how many employees you employed and how much they earned, that you would make it better for the employers themselves, so that it isn't just about people getting money for sitting on a couch, but it's about getting the economy rolling again.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I remember last year saying, look, we need some short-term pain for long-term gain, because if we pay people $50,000 a year right now with the businesses shut down, there's no way in the world that the Democrats are going to give that up, okay?
Nope.
They see this as an opportunity to usher in socialism. We know that they love the idea of universal income and such, and so why would they not seize on this opportunity? They know what they want, what's called expanded Medicare and such. What is expanded Medicare? It's expanded to include people that are lower income, that are able-bodied, able to go get a job, able to go get insurance. They could go, but no, let's go ahead and expand it even further, so that based on their income, it incentivizes people to say, hey, I can make more money staying at home, even if I'm able-bodied. So it's the very same principle here. They say, Rahm Emanuel, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Right.
Here's an
right.
opportunity for us to use COVID right. and the shutting down of businesses to usher right. in this sense of government pay. And Jonathan,
hey guys, what if we had just let's go back in time too, and as well, and say, wait a minute, what if we had incentivized, which we didn't do? And again, I think this is a fault on the Trump end of things as well. Why didn't we incentivize states to get open back much faster, to where, you know, in Colorado, we've just been really literally without masks since, you know, a little bit before Memorial Day is all. And, you know, and again, we've got unemployment benefits running until September. What if we had incentivized states to get off that government dole even faster? But to your point, Bob, I think a lot of those governors had an in, and I am one that says too, by the way, and we've talked about this before, but I believe the whole COVID thing was used as a way to win an election, part of the legwork in winning an election.
Totally.
And I feel like a lot of these governors had an in with the, you know, Biden administration or the Democrat Party, if you would, knowing that there was going to be some huge paybacks coming back to them if they did all these different things and shutdowns and so on, which, by the way, we are right in saying so, because that's exactly what's happened. So I think the Trump administration really made a big mistake in not incentivizing states to get back on track faster, and not let them just stay the way they were on these lockdowns for, you know, in some cases a year plus.
Okay, now, John, let me play devil's advocate with you here on behalf of Trump, even though I completely agree with you, okay? The political reality, the situation that Trump was in last year, because you had not only, you know, the CDC and the WHO and Dr. Fauci and everybody else, and of course the mainstream media saying this is bubonic plague on steroids, and add to that, unfortunately, pretty much every country around the world, except for Sweden, on the same, this is the biggest cataclysmic event in all of world history. The only thing larger is the January 6th riot. But other than that, it's the largest cataclysmic event in the history of humanity. Even though Trump is a guy that faces into the wind, he runs up the down escalator, we get that. Could he really have politically gone against the grain of pretty much the world and said
yes, he could have. Well, I mean, guys, this is called basic leadership, and as a country, we should have taken the lead on this, and we should have done things differently than we did. And I guarantee you, if you sat down in a room with him and even some of the guys that were around him at the time, guys and gals around him, they would go back and agree with what we're all saying right now. Yes, we should have, as a country, taken the lead, done things differently. We didn't. We followed with what the rest of the world did, and unfortunately, when you're a follower, you reap those benefits of being a follower, and here we are now.
But see, this is, absolutely, we could have done things differently. And I totally agree with what John just said. And this is why, I mean, I think that incentivizing employers and people who go to work, as opposed to primarily incentivizing people who are staying home from work, would have shifted the whole thing. I was looking at an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal. They said it's this whole thing, all that we're talking about today, including going all the way back to the first stimulus package and the $600 that was provided in expanded, you know, unemployment benefits and stuff, that all of it rolled together is mainly a way to station their high-speed train to a cradle-to-grave welfare entitlement state. And then they gave specifics, you know, including some of the most recent stuff that's been talked about. And this weekly enhancement of $300, which was actually proposed as $400 by Democrats and stuff like that. But the point is, this has everything to do with Obamacare as well and trying to sweeten the pot so that people stay on it. Most unemployed people literally don't have to pay a penny for their premiums. That's the hope. That's the dream. Earned income tax credit, according to the Wall Street Journal, has now become an unearned income tax credit. There's all kinds of stuff that you need to look at when you're looking at the big picture of everything that's happened. And they conclude their article by saying the goal of the Democratic program isn't COVID relief. The point is to expand and solidify the role of government as the guarantor of everyone's income, Americans' income, unlinked to any obligation to work. So that's what we really need to see this as. So my point being, Donald Trump was a Republican president, but he also had a Republican Senate, Republican-controlled Senate. And I think that with some crafty negotiation with Democrats, I mean, they were going to get something passed. It certainly could have looked different than what it ended up being in the very in the first place. I definitely think it could have been different.
All right, let's take one more short break, and we'll pick it up from there in a couple of minutes more with the National Crawford Roundtable coming up next.
Dr. James Dobson left a successful career in academia to preserve and promote the biblical family in America. The radio broadcasting ministry of Dr. Dobson spans over four decades, earning him 17 honorary doctorate degrees and an induction into the National Radio Hall of Fame. Today, Dr. Dobson continues to champion marriage and parenthood through Family Talk. Listen every weekday at drjamesdobson.org and be sure to reference the National Crawford Roundtable podcast when asked how you listen to Family Talk.
Continuing this National Crawford Roundtable podcast with Neil, John, myself, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh, be back with us next week, talking about the incentivizing of people staying at home, collecting more money than they could if they went back to work. Let's start shifting this to the philosophical, guys, if we could, from the political to the philosophical and then ultimately to the biblical. But philosophically, what is happening to people in America today, Neil, that they're not embarrassed to sit at home and sit on the couch playing video games instead of going back to work? Whatever happened to the concepts of responsibility, of work ethic, of honor, of earning a dollar? And I'll be honest with you, I would be embarrassed if I was able to go get a job, but instead I'm sitting at home playing video games, having a beer while I collect my free government money that's really from my neighbor. What happened to the pride of a hard day's work? It seems like that's going away, Neil.
Okay, I'm not going to say this is the rule. I'm going to say it's the exception. So please hear that at the beginning. But let me just add a little bit of a twist here to what you're saying. Because not everybody's sitting on the couch drinking a beer. What if somebody saw this as an act of God to give them time to plant a church, or people were using the time and effort to feed the poor? I actually know somebody that has fed thousands of people in the Buffalo area, or to share the gospel, or to care for a dying parent. Like I can't even believe that right now I'm getting some income and I don't have to go to work because I'm caring for my parent who's dying, or, you know, those kind of things. Go on a mission trip, or maybe collect the money that the government's given you and choose to give it to the poor. Did that happen? Yeah, probably somewhere. I got to believe that some people used the situation altruistically, but human nature being what it is, I got to believe that the vast majority are saying, hey, this is the greatest thing ever. I don't have to go to work, and I can still collect money. This is amazing. So you ask, you know, where did that kind of ideology come from? And I honestly believe it came from our parents, which I'm not trying to blame them, but what I'm saying is each new generation, it seems, always wants to make things easier on the next generation. And if you go all the way back to the greatest generation and then start moving through, you know, the process, you get the boomers who had things a little bit easier than their parents, and then you had, what, Gen X, and then eventually the millennials, and I think we're on to Gen Z or something right now. But the point being that entitlement in that process has grown generation after generation. And we live in a world now where we just want to make everything easy for our kids. You know, they're either going to get full scholarships to college or we're going to pay their way. I can't say nobody, but many are not working their way through school. And I realize a statement like that is offensive to somebody who is, but you gotta agree that things are way different today than back in the day. I mean, if you said to a kid, I thought you had to get to work, you know, aren't you going to leave? And they said, well, yeah, but so-and-so is picking me up, or you need to give me a ride. You say, well, how about riding your bike to work? Are you kidding me right now? Ride my bike to work? Really? This is the world we live in. So I don't know. I think that the mentality was set. And and then on a softer side of this, let me just say this, but on a softer side, I would guess that none of us said no to the stimulus checks. So, I mean, we didn't work to earn those stimulus checks. They were just sent to us by the government. We took them, we cashed them, and whatever. Unless somebody here is, you know, way better than I imagine, I think we probably all did that. So in one sense, we're a little bit culpable here too. So all that rolled together. But yes, overall, I think it's a tremendous problem that we now live in a world where the government says, hey, we're just going to take care of you, and you just sit back and relax, and we are absolutely setting ourselves up for socialism.
Well, I tell you what, there's a lot to unpack there in what you said. First of all, the original thing, you said this is probably the exception, not the rule. I think that's very, very slimly the exception and not the rule, certainly. And by the way, I'll be honest with you, Neil, I wouldn't even be comfortable with somebody saying, I'm going to stay at home under false pretenses to start a ministry, okay, or to even take care of some things in my family, because it really is under false pretenses. This is supposed to be COVID relief money for people to keep themselves alive because they're not able to go to their job. So if you are able to go get a job, right, and you're pretty much violating the spirit of the intention of this,
I don't think that would
be right to even start a ministry.
But wait, well, true, but there's been several waves of this, and during each of the height of each of those waves, it's not been as easy as always to find a job because restaurants are shut down or certain businesses, hair salons, health clubs have shut down. So there were less jobs available, and even if somebody was looking for one, so in other words, if they were collecting these benefits for, let's say, a three-month period, and in hindsight said, you know, that was the last 3 months my dad was here on planet Earth and I had the opportunity to care for him. What a gift from God. I'm just saying, Bob, that I don't think we ought to throw everybody under the bus on that and say that they're all sitting on the couch drinking beer, because it definitely wasn't the case in every case.
All right, hang on a second, because we're coming on the bottom of the hour, and we want to remind everybody you can listen to the second half of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast online, and you can listen to that online by going to crawfordmediagroup.net or wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. And by the way, we always welcome nice 5-star reviews from you folks. We appreciate those reviews. So crawfordmediagroup.net, and John and Neil and myself, and of course Rob, will be back with us next week, but we're going to continue the second half of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast online next.
This has been a Crawford Broadcasting production.
Continuing the National Crawford Roundtable podcast with myself, Bob Duco, out of Detroit, with Neil Boron live from Buffalo, New York, John Rush, Rush to Reason, out of Denver, Colorado, Roger Marsh of The Bottom Line from the People's Republic of California will be joining us again next week. We don't have Roger with us this week. We're talking about the people staying at home, collecting government money, not going back to work, employers having a hard time getting them back. We're talking about the philosophical part of this now. John, let me ask you again. You're a businessman. You've employed a lot of people over the years. You continue to do so. Whatever happened to that sense of honor, responsibility, integrity, work ethic? I'll tell you, John, one of my favorite movies, don't know if you've seen it, is Cinderella Man. This is the movie Russell Crowe played the boxer from the 1930s, James Braddock. All right, you got the Great Depression going on, right, and it's really a great movie. And he couldn't even keep his kids, couldn't feed his kids. It was horrible. Right. He ended up having to deal with charity. But for the first time ever in his life, he took government money, took welfare money. Right. But as soon as he got back up on his feet, one of the things that was in the movie, and he did this in real life, was he calculated how much money he collected from the government. Mm-hmm. He added interest to that, and then he went and he stood in line at the welfare office to pay it back afterward. Now, I'm not saying as believers we have an obligation per se to do that, but this was a sense for him of this is personal integrity. I should earn what money I get. And so, but it's almost like this new generation, John, as Neil was saying, kids aren't being raised up that way. They're being raised up to, hey, what you can get. And it's almost becoming a bragging point for them of saying, oh, yeah, I'm getting money staying at home. How stupid are you having to work for your money? What in the world's going on, John?
Philosophically, so many things to unpack here, and you're right. We are not raising generations that, you know, believe in, you know, a hard day's work equals a good day's pay, and, you know, as long as you outwork the guy next to you, you'll always have a job. We're not teaching that in today's society. We're also not teaching fiscal responsibility. There's no reason why we live in a day and age today, especially in the United States of America, with the wealth that we have, that people have to live paycheck to paycheck. And by the way, everybody listening to me, am I being unkind when I say that? Absolutely not. Guys, I have counseled, I don't know how many different people when it comes to finances. I have sat on boards where it's decided whether or not somebody gets assistance from a particular charity or not. And I can tell you that a lot of these folks that will tell you that they live paycheck to paycheck also have all of the other amenities that everybody expects today, from cable television to eating out to on down the line we go. And nobody is willing to sacrifice to put the amount of money in the bank they need to sustain something like what we just went through. And this should be a great example to everybody listening that these things may happen again and probably will. Why do you not have 2, 3, 4, 6 months even of money in the bank, savings, if you would, or investments, whatever it happens to be, to make sure if this happens again, you're able to handle it? And by the way, this isn't a biblical situation, guys, even though it is, because everything we do really does come from the Bible, but this is a philosophical slash financial issue that we as a country, we have not trained, let's face it, we haven't trained the next generation how to balance a checkbook, nonetheless, how to handle the things that we're talking about today. So there's so many things here to unpack. Unfortunately, we're only going to have an hour to do so. And guys, I just don't know how you do it all in 1 hour, because there's so many things that I feel like, you know, we as a church, by the way, have failed in, from civics and what is our civic duty to, you know, the financial end of things. And I realize there's a lot of churches out there that use, you know, Dave Ramsey's material and others out there to try to teach people how to be fiscally responsible and how to handle things and so on. And so I'm not trying to make a blanket statement that we as a church don't do this, you know, like we should. But the reality, guys, is we don't do this enough. You know, every pastor out there, and maybe not every, Neil, you could answer my question here probably better than anyone. I would say, though, by and large, a large percentage of pastors hate to talk about money. Why? Because anybody inside the church, when they start talking about money, feels like they're asking for it, even though they could give some great sermons on the things we're talking about right now, about just fiscal responsibility and, you know, what should you be doing in life when it comes to these particular situations? There's so many sermons here, but yet how many pastors do you hear preach and talk about these things? You know, what should you get for a hard day's work? How do you stay ahead of the next person that's in line vying for your job? And by the way, for all of you listening out there that sat at home during a pandemic when you could have been benefiting yourselves many, many ways, because guys, there were plenty of essential jobs out there that did look for additional workers during this time that would have hired other people, and you could have probably made even a career change during these past 6 months and been way ahead of the guy next to you, but instead you sat home and collected the government cheese.
Neil? Pastor Neil?
Well, no, he's right. He's 100% right. And largely, I mean, certainly not, again, it's not true in every case, but a lot of the conversation about money in churches is about just more giving or about prospering as a result of giving, the whole prosperity gospel kind of thing. But, you know, what you're talking about is just sensible life skills, biblical life skills, that I know we're going to get into in just a few minutes. But, I mean, this is it's about honoring God in how we do our work and serving God and serving others in the process. And there's great joy to be taken in that because we were created for it. So I know that we can say more about that in just a couple of minutes. But this thing is really, really troubling when you look at it, because the idea that, I mean, well, here's an example, and I don't even know if the cruise industry is up and running again, but, you know, how many times have you seen a commercial for the Caribbean cruise that says, you deserve this, you deserve a luxury vacation? Well, that's why people don't have any money in their savings account, or because they deserve a Ford F-350, brand new. You know, forget about buying a beater car, as Dave Ramsey talks about. I need the new car. I need a 100-inch television set. I need it because my neighbors have it, you know, and the mentality is so warped. We don't understand anything about working hard and being content with what we have until God might bless us with something else. But yeah, it's a tragedy. And that very thought right there is beginning to undermine our values individually and in families and in our nation.
Yeah. Guys, really quick, I just need to add to this. There's really two words that sum up everything we're talking about, including the biblical side of this, and it really, especially when it comes to conservatives, because as far as I know, this is one of the core beliefs we have as conservatives. It's two words: personal responsibility.
Right. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. We've lost that.
Those words are, yeah, but that's passé these days. People, if anything else, it's considered, you know, there used to be a time when you were embarrassed to stay at home and take free money that you didn't earn. Now, people say that they're embarrassed if they're going out and working for something that they could get for free. I mean, Neil, you said early on, and I know this wasn't your sentiment, but you were voicing the sentiment of a lot of people, why in the world would anybody go out there and haul cement for 40 hours a week when you can stay home, sit on the couch, and get the same money without having to haul the cement? You know, and
exactly. That's
the way that people think today, but
well, and real quick, guys, you want to know why? Part of why they think that way, Bob. I had this experience this past week. I belonged to some Facebook groups around our town and around my neighborhood, and I had to correct a couple of people this week because one person made the comment about something along the lines of, well, you know what? The government has all the money in the world. They should be able to do anything they want to. And I quickly responded, the government has zero money,
right.
And the money they do have comes from us as taxpayers. Never forget that. But again, philosophically, guys, what we as Christians and as churches, I know on our programs we do this constantly, but the problem is, when's the last time you ever heard somebody in church talk about the fact the government has zero money?
Right. I know.
You know,
it is ours. They're a conduit for our money.
That's
Can
right.
I just mention, Bob and John, I just need to mention this. I may lack personal responsibility, but it's your fault, okay? So just keep that.
You're right. We need to stop the hate, too. Okay, so let me ask you guys something, all right? Philosophically, and biblically for that matter, devil's advocate, I do not agree with what I'm going to say, but let me just say it anyway. What's wrong with taking something you haven't earned if it's legal and it's being offered to you? Okay, if the government says you don't have to go get a job, you can stay home on the couch, and we're going to go ahead and just give you money to do it, and it's up to you to decide whether you want to go get a job or not. If it was illegal to take the money, then we could Romans 13 them and say they're not obeying the governing authorities. But if it's legal to accept that money and you haven't earned it, is there something unbiblical about staying at home? Why not, John? Why not say, I choose to collect the money that's legally given to me, and I choose not to sweat like a dog for this money when the government says I don't have to? Mm-hmm. Why is that wrong?
I think it comes back to, just because something's legal, does that make it correct? Probably another podcast we could do in and of itself, yeah. Guys, because I'm not sure that just because something is legal, it's really the right thing to go do. And, you know, so many examples of that from, you know, the lottery, you know, on down. I mean, there's just certain things that I believe, because they're legal, doesn't necessarily make them morally right, especially from, you know, whether it be a Christian's point of view or just in general speaking. So just because the money's being given and it's legal, does that mean I should take it? Again, I can't answer that for everyone. I don't know everyone's circumstances, much like Neil talked about earlier. I know different people had different things going on, and I definitely do not want to be judge and jury for every single person out there. But I will tell you right now, when there are now 8+ million jobs open in America, if you are now still today on the government dole, shame on you. That I can say.
All right. Neil, biblically, as a pastor, what is wrong if somebody – is a Christian being wrong and violating something scripturally if they say, look, I'm obeying the law, and the government says you don't have to work, we'll subsidize you staying at home, we'll give you money to stay at home. There are jobs out there I could get if I wanted to, but I'm not going to for no other reason than I don't want to. I don't have to, and the government says I don't have to, so I'm not violating Romans 13. What do you say to that person?
During the days of Operation Rescue, I think it was around 1992, Spring of Life, Buffalo, New York, I was talking with a woman who was a radical pro-abort, standing in a line with others who believed in abortion. Of course, sitting in front of the door was a bunch of people, participating in civil disobedience. They later got arrested and were taken away, but I was covering that situation. I talked to this girl and I said, you know, we're talking about a baby, right? And stared me down, seething, said to me, of course we know it's a baby, but it's legal. And it just absolutely gave me the creeps. My hair on the back of my neck stood up on end. I couldn't believe in that case what I was hearing. But this is a slightly different situation, similar. But let me just say this. Would we have done a podcast on the unemployment situation, in other words, that you can collect unemployment, would we have done a podcast on that if this whole thing with stimulus checks and expanded unemployment didn't happen? I mean, I don't know that any of us had a huge problem with it before because people were required to be looking for work. Some people probably abused that system. They pretended they were looking for work and stuff. And that clearly, in my mind, is absolutely biblically wrong. But we had an unemployment system in the U.S., and nobody seemed to be complaining about it. I wasn't seeing it in the Republican Party platform, or, you know, we weren't doing podcasts on that kind of thing. But so now we've got this new system, and people are, I think, have all the more incentive to abuse the system because it's lucrative. But God's word is clear that if we don't work, we shouldn't eat. 2 Thessalonians talks about that. And, you know, that's the reality. And God created us for work prior to the fall. You see it in Genesis chapter 2, verse 15. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. At chapter 3 is when we read about toil being added to that process. But working, showing our creative ability, blessing God in our work, blessing others is all part of what it means to build the kingdom. And we were created for good works. You could say that that's a misapplication, you know, according to Ephesians 2:10, but I believe it's all part of it. God has created us for a plan and a purpose, and we glorify him when we use the gifts and the abilities that he's entrusted to us. To just sit back and say, I'm not going to contribute, I'm not going to do anything, I think is wrong, I think it's unbiblical, and I think we better look at that very carefully, especially if we're believers and we say that we understand that God's word is true. Right. Totally need to take a look at that.
I mean, let's get a break in real quick.
And I want to get you to respond to that. More of the National Crawford Roundtable coming up next.
Learn how to walk the narrow path with Steve Gregg. With over 40 years of studying the Bible, Steve Gregg is passionate about teaching you how to apply scriptural wisdom to every aspect of your life. Listen to The Narrow Path on your local Crawford broadcasting station or online at thenarrowpath.com. The Narrow Path is 100% listener supported. Please keep this vital ministry going with your generous financial support and let them know you heard about The Narrow Path on the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
Continuing this National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, Neil Boron, John Rush, myself, Bob Duco, Roger will be back with us next week. John, your response to what Neil was saying?
Well, I think that the parable of the talents, and I realize it's a parable, but it is what it is. And it's very true, by the way, whether you're talking about Christians or not. And that is, what are you going to do with the talent that God has given you? Whether you believe in God or not, what are you going to do with the talent that you've been given? And as I said earlier, are you going to use this last time that we just went through to better yourself and come out better on the other side and maybe even with a better job, with a better outlook on life, you know, with a whole different way of doing things after something like this just happened? In other words, are you going to reinvent yourself or are you just going to do the same old thing you've always done? And if the answer is you're going to do the same old things you've always done, then guess what? You're always going to be where you are. You're always going to be a paycheck behind and nothing's ever going to change in your world. And I'm not trying to be, you know, Mr. Self-Help here, guys, but the reality is God commands us to take the talents that we have and multiply them. And if you're just sitting at home as a Christian collecting an unemployment check, you're not doing that.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. And if you look at it throughout Scripture, work, this is an important point, Neil, that you made before as well. Work is not a bad thing, okay? Work is not a product of the fall, all right? The earth working against us and having a toil in our labor is a product of the fall. But God instructed Adam to care for the garden. There is work that's in heaven. We're going to be working. I mean, sometimes people think that, oh, we're going to sit on
the work's not a sin
all the time. Yeah, work is not bad. And work is not a bad thing. Now, personally, guys, I don't know what we're going to be doing in heaven. I don't know if there's going to be a WGOD that we're, you know, going to be able to have different day parts on. These things, I don't know. I don't think there's going to, let's face it, Neil, probably not going to be a big call for pastors, all right?
True.
For myself, probably not going to be a big call for apologists, I'm guessing. And so, but we will have jobs. But we won't have to, by the sweat of our brow, toil to produce them. We won't have to go against the grain. We'll enjoy it. It'll almost be like like hobbies. So work is a good and godly principle. 2 Thessalonians 3:12, remember, says, such people, this is Paul talking, command and urge in the Lord Jesus Christ to settle down and earn the bread they eat. We are supposed to be working. We're not supposed to be lazy slackers. Proverbs certainly tells us about not being sluggards and lazy and such. Proverbs 18:9 condemns laziness as well. And even the welfare system of the Old Testament in Leviticus 19 as well as Leviticus 23 actually has certain guidelines that were required for people to enjoy welfare. And I want to throw out one more thing here. 1 Timothy 5:9 and 10 gave welfare stipulations. It says, quote, no widow may be put on the list of widows unless she is over 60, has been faithful to her husband, is well known for her good deeds, such as bringing up children, showing hospitality, washing the feet of the Lord's people, helping those in trouble, devoting herself to all kinds of good deeds. In other words, you don't just get to say, I'm entitled to get free stuff just because I have a pulse. Even God's word was like, there are expectations that come with that are placed on you to, in essence, earn some of the charity that you're receiving, whether it's from a government program or from the church or something like that. Are you living up to your end and responsibility and doing everything you can do as well? This is a biblical principle. It's not a cold-hearted thing to say. It's a biblical principle, and we're throwing that down the drain by encouraging people, be lazy, get what you can get, take from other people as long as you're legally allowed to do it. And that's not right, and we need to raise up our children not to see life that way.
Go ahead, John.
I'll let you go in a second, Neil. Again, philosophically, guys, again, it comes back to, are we teaching our kids that the government has no money? If you take something from the government, you're taking it either from current taxpayers, which we're not because we're in such debt, we're taking it from future generations. But to your point, Bob, we're not taking that from the government. We're taking it from future tax revenue. And I get, guys, we could do a whole show on where does all the tax revenue come from. And no, not everything comes from the taxpayer. I mean, we have other things that come from, you know, I get it, corporate tax and leases that we do and investments as a country and on. I get it, okay? I know that every single dime the government spends doesn't always come from every taxpayer out there. But the reality is it did originate from there in the first place. Otherwise, they wouldn't have any.
Right. Yeah, good point.
So let me just throw this in. I mentioned earlier the stimulus check. Several of them. I think we had three of them. I took all of them and I cashed them. And I didn't do anything to receive them. I just got them. You know, I had to walk to the mailbox is the most I had to do to get that stimulus check. So applying that same thought to this process means I was in some kind of violation of God's plan and purpose. I don't think so. I think that there's a different category. I never for one second felt that the Holy Spirit was saying to me, don't cash that check. However, if I was on the dole right now, just sitting on my couch playing video games, collecting unemployment checks, I think that would be a radically different scenario. And maybe we can talk about why that's the case. But let me just say, I think one of my concerns in a conversation like this is creating some new form of legalism. And John, you and I are not fans of legalism. But you saw some of this with the whole woke, you know, social justice kind of movement, in particular as it's crept into the church. Like, we went through this phase where all of a sudden you really weren't a real Christian unless you took your missional, plan and purpose for how you're going to carry out ministry and include feeding the poor. And there was certain kinds of buzzwords that were acceptable just even a few years ago. And I think some of that continues today, but it almost creates a new form of legalism. Now, I know this guy who was preaching a series. I'm not going to say who it is, but was preaching a series on the Sermon on the Mount. And his basic conclusion was this. Jesus said, you know, if your hand offends you, cut it off. If your eye offends you, pluck it out. And he basically said, you know, Jesus is the same guy who said, if somebody asks you to go a mile, go two. So he said, I think we need to up the ante and do even more than what Jesus said we should do, which kind of struck me when you were talking about Cinderella Man, who paid back what the government had rightfully given him. He was eligible for it, but then paid it back with interest. Incredibly altruistic. It brings a tear to your eye to even think about somebody having that level of integrity, you know, to be able to do that. But is that what God is expecting of each one of us? Is that really, you know, if we've received, for instance, the stimulus check, should we pay him back with interest? Is that what God's asking? I don't personally think so. I think that we need to look at it a little bit more reasonably. But the reality is when it comes down to the bottom line, you could be working, but you're choosing not to. that there's somewhere in that mix that the Holy Spirit starts to say, look, this is about you and your attitude of just saying that this ought to be yours and people ought to pay your bills when you don't have to do any work. That's not God's plan and purpose. So I don't know. I want to look at this issue graciously and gracefully, but at the same time agree that there have been tremendous abuses and we need to call them out.
All right, let's do this. One more break, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what you're saying. The stimulus check, were we wrong? I hate calling it a stimulus check anyway. But the COVID paychecks, were we wrong to take them? How do we view that? And is that any different than what we're criticizing people for staying at home right now? I think that's a very fair question to throw out on the table. We'll do that next couple minutes from now as we continue this National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
Dr. Michael Youssef leads the way for people living in spiritual darkness to discover the light of Jesus Christ. This tremendous outreach begins with the proclamation of God's Word through the uncompromising biblical teaching of Dr. Michael Youssef. Leading the Way is here to equip and strengthen the church to stand strong and to advance the gospel in today's ever-changing world. Listen to Leading the Way with Dr. Michael Youssef at ltw.org/listen and be sure to mention you heard about their program on the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
Kind of winding down this National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, John Rush, Neil Boron, myself, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh will be back with us next week. Neil and John, let me throw this over to you. I do think that it's very different us taking those original checks from the government and depositing them. I don't think there was anything wrong with look, I got those checks and I took them, okay? But here's what the difference was. The government for people, when they sent those checks out to people, the government basically took away, they ordered that people were not allowed to work. And if the government shut down the ability to get a job, then I don't necessarily mind the government saying people's incomes are dropping. And since people's incomes are dropping because of actions that we are taking and you have no control over that, then therefore we feel a responsibility to subsidize what we are taking away from you because we're forcing the dropping of your income. To me, that's different than where we are now, certainly because the government's not forcing anybody to drop their income. You can go out and make a living right now if you want to. Right. You don't have to stay on the couch. So the government took it away from you, and that's the reason they said, we're going to replace what we took away from you. Now, personally, I would rather that not have done that from the beginning, but at least from a biblical perspective, if the government takes it away, there's nothing wrong with saying, okay, I will allow you to replace or supplement what you took away. They're not taking away your ability to go get a job right now, though.
No, they are not. And as far as the stimulus checks goes, I mean, personally, I can't answer that. I was one of those that did not receive one, and so I cannot answer that question, although if I had, would I have taken it and cashed it? Yes. I mean, essentially, the stimulus check, guys, was a rebate. Either think of it this way, a rebate on past taxes you've paid, or it's a credit for future taxes. Either way, you're going to pay that back anyway. So as far as the stimulus checks goes, that's not a big issue with me because I look at that as, you know, everybody has pretty much that got that paid into the system and will most likely pay again, and or, you know, think of it as a credit back for what you've already paid in the past and or will pay in the future. So the stimulus check thing for me wasn't a big deal as far as taking it. To me, that's not the same as sitting on the government dole with unemployment, especially now that there's over 8 million jobs in the country, far more than there even is on unemployment right now. So really, guys, the math says you don't need to be on unemployment right now.
Yeah, that's very true.
Hey, Bob, can I throw a tough question at you? Because I just this is the kind of thing I would love to talk about with you guys at a coffee shop sometime, just chew the fat on something like this. But the gospel itself is based upon the fact that because of God's unconditional love and his grace, all of us have the opportunity to know him and be forgiven of sin and have a relationship with him, not even based upon what we deserve, but actually the exact opposite of what we deserve. And so God's whole economy is based upon giving us all of this for nothing we did on our own. In fact, the exact opposite of what we did on our own. So somebody somewhere is going to try to argue that this is biblical to sit on your couch and collect a paycheck when you've done nothing because it all falls in line with God's thinking in the first place. I reject that idea. But right. Bob, you're the apologist, so you explain why.
I'll tell you why I would not consider that applicable at all, because God is God and the government is not. Okay, the government saying in essence we're going to give you the grace to go ahead and give you something undeserved. That's not their role. That's not their. Then that suddenly gives the same glory to the government that is reserved only for God.
Sure.
There are things I would argue that only God is entitled to. Here's kind of a loose analogy to this, but bear with me. I remember I was having a debate with somebody on some atheist or whatever called into my show one time and said, Bob, here's God saying, worship me, praise me, exalt me. Don't you think that God is kind of full of himself? Okay. And I remember saying to the caller, and I know I caught some people by surprise, I said, yes, he is, and he's the only entity in the universe that's allowed to be. Okay. God is allowed to say, I am to be exalted, I am to be worshipped, because he is God. He created us to worship him. That is a role that is unique to God to receive worship. There's no other entity in the universe that is deserving to receive worship other than the Creator who created creation for the purpose of worshiping him. So, for lack of a better way to put it, the rules apply differently for the created than they do the Creator. Jealousy, we can argue, is a bad thing for us as humans, but jealousy is not a bad thing for God. Judging is a bad thing for us, but it's not a bad thing for God. God is the judge, not us. God is the one to receive worship, not us. Okay.
Love it.
The government is not in the position. The government is not perfect, holy, and righteous to therefore have the role to extend mercy to people and say, you don't have to work for something. Yes, you do. The government is made up of human beings that are equal sinners with all the rest of us. We all stand below a holy and righteous God.
Boom. Look at that.
Yeah.
Mic drop time.
Good said.
That was good. So well,
well said.
Well, you know what? But that's a great point, though, that you bring out. There is a tendency sometimes, it kind of makes my eye twitch, there is a tendency sometimes to apply the rules, if you will, for humans, the standards for humans, and somehow apply them to God and say that, well, God is not living according to and operating according to the standards that he applies to the rest of us. What are you talking about? Okay, I got a 15-year-old son. He's not allowed to drive my car, okay? Why? Because he's 15. Okay, there's certain things that parents versus kids, okay? The parent says you're grounded. Should the kid say, well, how come I'm not allowed to ground you? Because I'm your parent, all right? That's why, okay? Well, how come God doesn't have to blah, blah, blah? Because he's God, okay?
Right.
And we are not. We need to get past this notion of hey, let's try to create parity between us and God and have him play by the same rules that he has established for all the rest of us. That's one of the problems in our narcissistic world today. It's all about me, and God's job is to serve me, and the universe revolves around me. Well, I got news for you guys. When I get to heaven, I have no intention of saying to God, well done, thou good and faithful servant. I want to hear that. I don't want to say that. It's a different standard. There's potentially an entire podcast to have on the narcissistic sense of self, and we make everything about us, and God is our heavenly vending machine, it seems. So, Neil, you're getting me on a rant, man.
I know, but I'm loving it.
So we got to talk about that. All right, we're kind of winding down this time. John, any final thoughts then on people that are right now, Christians listening to this podcast, that are saying, you know, I'm collecting free money from the government and I can stay at home and I'm enjoying this right now and I just don't feel like I should have to go out and sweat like a pig. There's plenty of time for me to go get a job, but if I can enjoy this break, why not enjoy this break? Maybe a final word to them, John.
I think you need to have a heart check and really look at what are your motivations for doing what you're doing, and are you really trying to better yourself? Or are you just sitting back and coasting? Because nowhere in Scripture that I've ever seen says you sit back and coast.
Right. Neil?
Yeah, and I think we need to check our hearts, seriously. James 1:5 says, if we lack wisdom, we should ask of God. And what I mean by that is the unemployment system in our country was set up to see people through some rough times, whether it's a few weeks or a few months. It was never meant to be permanent. And even with this additional, you know, expanded benefit kind of thing, it's supposed to end, I guess, September 6th. We'll see if that's true. But I think everybody ought to be checking their hearts to say, look, if you're on unemployment temporarily to see you through a difficult time, and your immediate plan and thought is to get back on a paycheck as fast as you possibly can to find new work and to keep moving forward with your life, great. But if you're sitting back and just expecting to collect when you haven't done the work, I think you're out of bounds, and you need to ask what the Holy Spirit has to say about that, because that's not God's best for us.
Right. And let's face it, it is, in essence, collecting charity from your fellow man. It's not the government's money. It is your neighbor's money. You're
that's
taking
right.
money from your neighbor under the false pretenses of you're not able to pay your bills. And so that's a false pretense. If you're able-bodied and you're able to go get a job, even if it's not the perfect job or what you would prefer to have or whatever, that doesn't matter. You don't have to live off of charity, but you're basically collecting charity as though you have no choice but to live on charity. I would say that's deception, that's theft, and that's collecting money under false pretenses. And so
agreed.
You need to get your butt off the couch and go get a job. All right, now, there we go. And by the way, that's not cold-hearted. I want to make sure and stress, and I know all three of us agree on this. We're not talking about people that are unable to work. We're not talking about the widows and the orphans. We're not talking about people that are handicapped, people that are physically unable to work. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people that are able to and choose not to.
That's right.
Don't engage in laziness and theft and taking charity under false pretenses, and that's what you're doing. So, all right, there we go. Another National Crawford Roundtable podcast in the bank. Folks, we always appreciate you listening to us. We do. We always appreciate you giving us reviews of the podcast. We get a lot of five-star reviews, and we very much thank you for that. You can listen to past episodes of this podcast by going to CrawfordMediaGroup.net. You can also, of course, listen wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Neil Boron Live from Buffalo, New York. John Rush, Rush to Reason, Denver, Colorado. Myself, Bob Duco, The Bob Duco Show out of Detroit. Roger Marsh of The Bottom Line from California, who will be back with us next week. John, Neil, always great catching up with you. Thanks a lot. Work hard this week, as I know we
yes.
all will, and look forward to working in a biblical way with you guys again next week. Good seeing you.
Thank you.
Good stuff, guys.
You bet. Take care. And thanks for listening, everybody. God bless.
This has been the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Download and subscribe to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Apple users can rate the podcast, and we'd appreciate your five-star rating. National Crawford Roundtable Podcast returns with a new discussion each week. Be sure to watch for the notification on your podcast app. This has been a Crawford Media Group production.